and welcome to the Blue Team Podcast, your weekly unofficial podcast dedicated to all things Peterhead FC. This week we'll be looking back on last week's two games, preview the historical trip to Palmerston, and we have your Balmoor memories. Yes, you are listening to the Blue Team Podcast. I am Colin Byers, and with me as ever is Martin Smith. Martin, welcome along. How are we this week?
Good afternoon. Not too bad. Thanks. How are you?
Not too bad. How was your week? How was your weekend?
My week was good. My weekend, excluding the Saturday, was good. it was good, apart from the FA. Well and truly beaten. Aberdeen, well and truly beaten. Not the best weekend.
No, and I suppose we'll come on to Saturday's game, and I guess the general feeling is that we've picked up, certainly on what we're going to mention on the social media comments, and even just we folk that we spoke to after the game, a lot of unhappy people, it seems to be now.
Yeah, there's a couple of guys at work, they've been very... supportive of Jim, but even their thoughts and opinions this morning were, you know, quite different if they were saying a month ago. And as you said, I think that's the general feeling among supporters at the moment. Obviously, we're just going on maybe a small percentage of what we're hearing and seeing, but yeah, there definitely appears to be a bigger noise coming from the supporters who are maybe not as backing of Jim as what they once were.
Yeah. Surprised, actually, the attendance was over 700, which I guess that would have been due to the travelling support.
Yeah, Falkirk took up a good crowd, which, you know, it doesn't surprise me. They're normally well backed away from home anyway. So, yeah, I think the attendance may be slightly surprising, as you said, with the numbers, but I think the wouldn't say the vast majority, but I think a fair percentage of it would have been Falkirk supporters.
Before Saturday's game, there was a game last Wednesday, which we'll touch on briefly, FC Edinburgh away from home. It was a 2-0 loss, two very late goals in the last sort of 5 minutes of the game. We went there last week, we spoke about the game last week, we thought this was going to be the trickier of the two, the Falkirk one and the FC Edinburgh. Maybe we didn't get that particularly right, but for large spells of the game, and what we maybe touched on the week before was how defensively organised we seemed to be, and the shape was there, but in the end, it is another loss.
Yeah, I think, you know, Wednesday and Saturdays is two different types of defeats. I think the Wednesday one we can be disappointed with. No, it's come from within corner, one of the goals as well, which is something you'll probably touch upon later on. But it's disappointing that we seem to be decent enough going forward or try to create chances at times, but then we leave the door open at the back and, you know, partly because of our own downfall. But I went to the last 10, 15 minutes, I thought, yeah, we'll look good. And if we got something from, you know, Dunfermline away being 2-0 down and then something at Edinburgh, you know, they're biting your hand off for it. But as you said, ultimately, in the day, it's still another defeat.
And once the first goal goes in, it there's almost an air of inevitability that the second one's going to go in as well.
Yeah, there's definitely a lack of confidence through the team. And, you know, and that's a nice slant on the defenders or the goalkeeper either. It's just one of them things. Once you concede goals, your confidence will be down. But as you said, it seems to be at the moment that once one goes in, you think the floodgates could open and you get, you know, the opposition could get two or three. And at times, they don't have to work too hard for it. I think that's probably that disappointing aspect as well. Confidence, we've spoken about it before quite a few times now, but it's a massive thing. And once you start leaking goals, it's very difficult to try and to stop that.
And the two goals, one, as you rightly said, was from a counter-attack, ironically from Lorraine corner. The second one is from their corner. Those are two goals that we seem to be conceding quite a lot of this season, getting caught on the counter-attack when we do venture forward and then conceding from set pieces.
There needs to be the right balance between attacking and defending. I just think at the moment, you could go through quite a few things, to be honest, but I think the balance of the team, when we're, especially at set pieces, I find it weird that we get caught out, because obviously you think you're probably better structured and organised at a set piece. You should know your man is, know where to be, the right area. And to get caught out quite a few times this season is really frustrating. And defending at set pieces, I wouldn't say over the last couple of years has been a major problem for us. I think attacking-wise, I would certainly think it is. Trying to score from corners and set pieces have been poor, but defending hasn't normally been that bad. But this season, you know, it's one of them things. Literally everything that could go wrong for us this year is going wrong for us.
It's interesting you mentioned that, but a quarter of the goals that we've conceded already this season, that's 44, so that's quite a lot of goals. A quarter of the goals that we've conceded have come from set pieces, corners or free kicks. And last season it was only 4 for the entire season. So there is a massive difference between this season and the last season. I know we'd mentioned it on our social media through the week after the Edinburgh game, and the argument is that, well, it's a new squad, they're all getting to know each other. But as you've rightly said before, we're now into October. You know, when do you start saying, well, it's just the defending's just not been good enough at these corners? There's obviously something different from last season in terms of the coaches being there or not being there in this case. You know, is that maybe a factor?
Yeah, 100%. I think so. I sat here 4 weeks ago and we said, you know, on air that how long do you give it? You know, do you go into October and you still say the same thing of you're waiting for the team to gel? Every week we seem to hear another new player coming in, or we're linked with another player. I don't think throwing numerous players at it is now going to resolve the situation. It's working hard on the training ground and trying to get things ironed out. Now, we lost a lot of big characters in the summer, and that's not necessarily folk in training, but you've lost, you know, we've said it numerous times, you've lost key personnel off the pitch. And I think, you know, everything's just starting to unravel. We're seeing more and more things that other parties maybe contributed more towards last season that's now no longer there. And yeah, it's difficult, but I kind of sit here in October and say it's a new team and it's still gelling. You know, it's, obviously plans have been in place from July for getting players in. And it's okay drip feeding one or two players in, but like I said, we're now at the 10th of October. I kind of sit here and say, yeah, we're still a team gelling. Conceding 44 goals a quarter of the way through the season, you know, that tells its own story.
FC Edinburgh had a lot to ride on that game. There was a chance for them to go top, which they did. You would have expected us to have very little of the ball, which we end up having. So it was a game that it could have gone either way, really. But as I said, once that kind of first goal goes in, you just know that at this stage of the season, and you know, the way things are going, you just kind of feel as though we're going to dig something out.
I think in previous seasons, when we went a goal down, you always felt that you had characters in the squad that could get you back into the game. And I mentioned it a couple of weeks back, looking for real leaders, real characters in the squad. And when things aren't going your way, that's when you notice the real characters. And, you know, things aren't going your way just now, and you're looking for players to step up. We've shown it in brief spells and games. You know, the Dunfermline game, Jason Brown took the bull by the horns, took a throw in, and then he's chased it down. He's got the resulting goal to get back into it. But I'm just not seeing that many characters at the moment that can get us back into the game when we do go a goal down.
I think the difference between the Edinburgh game and the Dunfermline game, I think Dunfermline came into it, just expecting to turn up and win it. And I think when they went 2-0 up, I think they maybe switched off. Whereas Edinburgh, they got their tails up a little bit and were going to go for it. That first goal, they got the second, maybe could have gotten a third as well. Whereas, as I said, the Dunfermline game, they switched off. And that's kind of the difference of, you know, digging a point out against Dunfermline and losing to two late goals as we did against Edinburgh.
Dunfermline, when complacency, I think, crept in when they went 2-0 up, I think they thought that the game was done. We've gotten back into it. Whereas Edinburgh, as you said, they kept going. But I think the fact that we'd also been 2-0 down on the Saturday, I think Edinburgh would have been a bit more streetwise. They'd have realised, right, Peter, he's been in that situation before. Didn't allow that situation to happen to us. the fact that you said they could have gone top of the table that night, which they did, I think also played a part. I think they just had that little bit more grit and determination to try and get the 3 points.
So we'll move on to Saturday's game. Do we have to? Yes, we do, I suppose. So Falkirk, they were coming up. You knew that they were going to have a lot of the ball. We speculated on how he was going to set up for this one, whether he was going to stick with the five at the back, whether he was going to go with 4-1-4-1. It started with 5-4-1. There was a few changes in terms of how he was lining players up, tactic-wise, and it just didn't seem to work at all through this game. We were just never at it. 4-0 was how it finished. If it finished 6 or 7, I think that would have flattered Falkirk at all. Anybody in that stadium there probably would have thought, well, they probably would have deserved it had they had a decent finisher, a decent number 9 that could have well have been 6 or 7. And that's, I think that's been generous as well.
Yeah, Saturday was, well, somebody at work to me this morning said that they've been gone with their friend for over 40 years watching Peterhead now, and they have said it's one of the worst performances they have seen. Now, folk have been watching football a lot longer than us will be able to comment whether they feel that's right or not, but that's a general consensus at the moment. That's far we're sort of at as a team. Performances are so poor that folk are comparing it to being, you know, as bad as that. The one thing I would say in the first half, that if you change formation 3 times within 25 minutes, have you done enough of your homework prior to that? Now, I know that you can say it's brilliant, he's changing things within the game, but we'll pick one person. I'll pick Danny Strachan, because you pointed out to me on Saturday. We had him at left back, we had him as a number 10, and then at one point we had him on the right wing. Now, if he has set up the team, Jim set up a team, and then you change it within 10 minutes, and then you change a player's role, which then changes another person's, how was that team meant to gel? I mean, people have thrown that at me before about we're a new team and we're gelling. Well, you kind of gel as a team for one game if you're constantly changing things. And to be honest, I don't think it made anything better if it were tried to do, if ever it was it were trying to do. And it just sort of played into Falkirk's hands. It was a really, really poor performance.
Yeah, and as you said, Danny Starker must have played about 4 or 5 different positions through the entire game. He wasn't the only one. There's a couple other guys were chopping and changing. But there's a few ones that you were looking at and going, why are they playing there? David Wilson, for example, he played left wing back, and we've got Andy McDonald playing centre half. Surely you'd want to play David Wilson as a centre half, as he is a centre half, and Andy McDonald, who, as we've said a few times at tail end of last season, beginning of this season, has been more comfortable as a left wing back or a left back. And those just kind of things, just a little bit baffling as to he's maybe got his reasons for it, but in the grand scheme, I think we just kind of understand why.
Yeah, and like you said, we've mentioned that a few times. I think Andy's better at left back, left wing back, full back, whatever it is. And David is better at a centre half. I just find it weird sometimes that the team selections the position that we'll play in, and then we change it about. I get that he's trying to do it for the right reasons. You can maybe think you can try and counteract something by changing something within the team. But I just looked at it on Saturday, and you know there was a few. You can say what you want about some players, but I think the reaction when Andy McDonald went off was quite telling as well. There was quite a few sarcastic, shall we say, applauses for him actually going off the park. And I don't think that's an indictment on him. I just feel that it's, if you're not playing players in what I would class as their fully natural role, and don't get me wrong, I'm sure Jim's got a better idea of the players than you and I do. But when you just look at things and you think, well, why have you got like a natural right back playing at left back and then he goes to number 10, then right wing? We've got a squad the biggest what we've got just now, I still can't understand why we're playing square pegs and round holes. And, you know, that it's a knock-on effect. But to me, things kind of continue the way they're going just now.
When you're playing, let's take the opening formation, and he's obviously said he's going to play 5-4-1 against a team who maybe aren't coming into this game as as getting on top form. So you're almost inviting the pressure on. And when you're and a run like that is it's difficult to see why you would want to try and invite the opposition onto you. The argument might be, well, we didn't have enough forward players to play maybe 4-4-2 or 4-1-4-1 or whatever it is. But Jordan Brown was sitting on the bench. Hafsala was sitting on the bench. He could have played Ryan Dow as a number 10 further forward rather than playing on the left wing. So is to kind of echo what you're saying is we're playing a formation that's just maybe doesn't suit us in terms of like we're at home. Let's just go for it. Okay. Take the bull by the horns and get at them and see what happens.
Are we maybe worrying about the opposition too much?
That's exactly what it is.
I think it probably is a factor. I think because we're on such a poor run and confidence is low, Jim's going to be looking at it thinking, well, how can I count them rather than thinking we're the home team. Our record at Balmour is, you know, it's what kept us up some seasons. Just go and attack. And I think Saturday's first goal, okay, the way it came about maybe caught me by surprise in terms of the way the game had gone for the first 20 minutes. But we sat too deep. We allowed in too much of the ball in midfield. I didn't think we pressed high enough to try and win the ball back. And we sort of invited the pressure on. And once we conceded the first team, you know, we said to each other, you know, okay, we've conceded the first, but how do we change it? And, you know, we're still scratching our head trying to get an answer because we didn't feel that we could get back into it. And I think that's quite a telling story as well from the home team.
Some folk will say, well, they've scored, their first goal has come from a counter-attack off of a corner. But they should have been 2-0 up before that. They had, yeah. The one where the guy sort of kicked it off his end fit for like 3 yards out. Tom Ritchie's had a save for Burrell 1-1. There's probably a couple other ones as well, but they could have really been 2-0 up before they've got that first goal. Yes, it is a bit of a blow to begin in, thinking you're going to be 0-0 at the break. Jason Brown's header coming off the line just before it as well. But as I said, we could have easily been 2-0 down, and the formation changes going for 5-4-1, 4-1-4-1, 5 back, then back to 5-3-2. Then it was 4-2-3-1. You mentioned Danny Strachan moving positions. Ryan Strachan was in a back three. Then he was into midfield. Then he was back at a back three again. And a couple of times you watch your players and they're sort of looking, well, far am I going, you want me over there? Really? Do you want me, Danny Strachan, do you want me playing as a number 10? As you said, you kind of get a team to gel if there are so much changes. Yes, I get there was factors, but 10, 12 players missing or unavailable.
Yeah.
Unavailable is the way to say it because some of them are injured, they're just unavailable. But you've still got, four or five on the bench that could have turned the game. And it was like the Edinburgh game where it was 0-0, waited until we were 1-0 doing before he made any changes. It's too late then.
And I don't get me wrong, I sort of feel for Jim in a way because, you know, the way things happened over the summer, you know, we got players in, he's maybe looking at it now going, yeah, maybe the quality wasn't there. But, you know, it's hard because it's also near a team that he's just coming, kind of he's new into a job where you could give the manager a bit of grace and go, well, we've only got four attacking options, but it's not his team. Mm-hmm. This is a team, you know, that's Rodgers, it's a board, and it's Jim's. And, you know, it's difficult because people listen to this, we're all for the same reason. We're wanting Peter Heath to do well. But at the moment, you know, you try and put a positive spin on it for a couple of weeks, but I just can't see a game plan. And I think that's probably what I'm trying to get at is when you look at the team, can you see the fit we're trying to do as a football team and the way we're trying to go as a team? And I look at it and I just think there's too many players that aren't fully aware potentially what position they're meant to be in and the role they're being asked to do. And when you're playing full-time teams, it makes it 10 times harder.
But how many times during that first half in particular were every player on that pitch bar their goalkeeper in the Peterhead half. Sitting far too deep for a home game. Again, they were playing essentially three up top, one up through the middle and two wide. But there's no need to be that defensive. Now, that maybe comes from the manager, I don't know, again, maybe that's just the players naturally going, right, we're on a run here, so you just instinctively sit another 5-10 yards further back. But it was just, that result was coming, and there was no other way to look at it and go, actually, they got a bit lucky there, or we were unlucky. That hiding was coming. It was just a matter of time. Well, once they got the first one, quickly got a second into the second half, and it was just like, how much is it going to be?
Yeah, that, like I said, I think the sitting so deep, like you said, it comes to a lack of confidence, and you naturally just drop it a few yards further back. They'd like to have seen us pressing a little bit more from up top and within midfield. That would have maybe allowed the defence to push further up. Like you said, once the first goal came, it's only a matter of time really before the second and third. I always felt Falkirk were likely to get a second before we were ever to get back into the game. But yeah, it's frustrating, and I get fans' frustration. You know, there's a few folk spoke to you as you were leaving on the game on Saturday, and frustration is growing. Like I said, it's just a matter of time how long things are allowed to go the way they are. You know, I appreciate Roger's statement, you know, the other month that said, you know, the problems that we've faced, but I think we've now got more internationals and in, you know, countries and more squad than we've ever had. Yeah, apparently we're struggling to attract players to the northeast. So there's something just not quite totaling up. But it's up to the players, the team, the board, everybody to try and come together. But like I said, it's looking more and more difficult as the weeks go by.
It was interesting that before we announced the signing of Julien Carré through the week, Jeremy said he's going to continue to look for players. And the squad is that big that he may have to move people on in January. Is that then an admission on his part that the players he's already brought in aren't good enough, or dare I say, were they just a short term fix to get us through the early part of this season?
Well, a bit of both. I think it was players that were available, especially going into the Aberdeen Cup game. I think there was a realisation that we had to get a squad assembled. You've seen that by taking players back on, you know, a month contract. I think that sort of tells you everything you need to know. Whether players are good enough, you know, that's Jim and Davey and the coaching staff that will make that decision on whether based on what they see in training. Probably the counterproductive thing we'd say to that is, well, can it be worse than what we're currently playing? As I say, players are playing, you know, aren't good enough, but is it worth giving certain players a chance? Because at the moment, you know, it's not like we're firing all cylinders. It's maybe worth playing somebody who hasn't played for a few weeks. Yeah, things are tough, but I go back to that. I just can't see a team direction where we're going. I can't see a plan. But you're hoping that Jim can pull something out the bag and very, very soon.
But the other frustrating thing is that was mentioned after the game on Saturday was the Lorraine situation, whereas he can't play for us until January now because somewhere down the line somebody has picked up on the fact that the rules for an amateur player in Europe means that he can't play for us now until January. And that's a frustrating thing because obviously we're paying him and they're playing him, and we can't get him played until January.
Yeah, so but the 1st of January before he can be registered, well, that'll be a day close. I think we've got a game on the 2nd, have we?
Yes.
So he won't be eligible for that game either until the paperwork is through. So, you know, that's another game in January it'll be before he's played. But yeah, frustrating. But if he's got the quality, then you maybe don't mind waiting until January. But I worry for the league table's got to look like in January, to be honest. Because we've got, you know, there's no easy game in this division. But the way we're playing it, it makes things a lot tougher.
As the game kind of progressed as well, you just felt as though that the frustration round about or in the stands was coming out a little bit more. There was one or two more negative shouts towards, maybe not necessarily towards the team, but just as a general thing, because a lot of folk were kind of unhappy with the performance. Maybe the ball was never getting moved quick enough, forward enough. Just almost just being too slow at times in the general play.
Yeah, I think going back to our topic we touched on last week about ticket prices, and when you're paying, you know, a price to watch a game, and you see that they're watching week in, week out, it's nae unreasonable for fans to be disgruntled by what they're seeing, what they're watching, and what they're paying for. And I get that, you know, as you said, there was a few mere murmurings on Saturday towards team, board, manager, club, just in general, venting their frustration. And yeah, I think you can accept the team losing and playing well, or seeing a direction they're going in. But at the moment, I think there's a lot of people. I say a lot of people. We're hearing that mayor for the more disgruntled fans at the moment, rather than the ones that are, dare I say, gym in camp. You know, I think there's a few mayor now just making murmurings of it's maybe time for a change. Now, whether that's the manager or whether it's further up the board, I don't know. I'll let people decide for themselves. But like I said, I certainly think the way we're going now, I think we'll struggle to be a League One team come May if this is the case.
I mean, the second goal probably sums up how things are going at the minute. There's two subs combined, and the guy's got a header for about 6 yards out, free header at the back post. Nobody picked him up whatsoever. It's such a simple goal for us to concede.
Yeah, it's too simple. I think, you know, there are certain goals that you can admire and go, yeah, we've just been outplayed, or, you know, good run, good movement. But when you get goal, three headers, back post, it's almost as bad as nicking a player in the post at corners. It's one of them things that it bugs me, to be fair. Three headers at the back post. But it's not like it wasn't on the table. That writing wasn't on the wall. It was clear that a second goal was coming for them. Yeah, it sort of just summed up where they really.
Third goal, I guess we could put it down as an own goal off of Tom Ritchie. It's clattered off the crossbar, come off at his back. But again, how has he been able to get that shot away? Why isn't anybody closing him down? Okay, unlucky break. Folk will say, well, that's how things are going. But again, we're already 2-0 down back stage.
I don't think it would have made a difference. I think even if the game was at 2-0, I don't think us pushing forward would have really worried Falkirk too much. I think they were in cruise control, to be honest.
The fourth one as well, just as we said earlier on, it's a header from a corner. And I don't know if Fritchie's maybe misjudged where it's going. Maybe there's a spin on the ball and it's teeing it into the corner. But, you know, with Bob Bells, three headers at the back post. I still don't get why nobody puts folk on post corners these days. I just do not get it. I mean, you could probably look through the last, you know, 10 years. They just beat a header, but just in football in general, the amount of goals that you concede for a header at a corner, it could have easily been cleared off the line had somebody been on those posts. And it just, if somebody had been on there, it would have. Wouldn't have gone in, but as I said, we're already 3-0 down.
Yeah, like I said, I don't think once they got their first, I don't think it really mattered. I don't think we offered nearly enough within the game. I don't even, believe it or not, I don't think Falkirk were that great on Saturday, if I'm being brutally honest. I don't think they were that great, but they could easily have won the game 6 or 7-0, and it wouldn't have flattered them. The reason I say that is because I thought we made them look good. Mm. We've mentioned it. I felt we were too deep within the press, high enough up the pitch, and then move as a unit. And Falkirk were good. A couple of nice passages of play. But from our point of view, it's another defeat. It's another home game. Performance is really, really poor. And, you know, confidence, I'd imagine, just now is really, really down.
Would say it's... It wasn't maybe just the best Falkirk performance, but it's probably the better performance that we've seen maybe in the last 3 or 4 years since they've been in League One. And that tells you how much they're sorry, they're improving or have made the changes and looked to improve, whereas, dare I say it, we're kind of in a bit of a rut, stagnating slightly maybe. I've seen that word being used quite a bit over the weekend, and that's, as you said, there is a real risk of finishing 9th, 10th and being in League 2 next season.
Yeah, it was one of Falkirk's better performance, but it's also coincides with one of our poorer performances as well, so it depends on your perspective how you look at it. I've said it a wee while now, I am concerned. I think that concern has been echoed by other supporters as well. And don't get me wrong, we're sitting here, but we're trying, you know, you want the club to do well, you want the wins, but at the moment, so something has to change somewhere. It's just where about that change needs to come from.
The fact that Tom Ritchie, the goalkeeper, got man of the match after we lost 4-0, yeah. we'll tell you how bad things are. And that's not to say that he didn't deserve his man of the match, but when you lose 4-0 and your goalkeeper gets man of the match, it tells you something. Really off the top of my head, did anybody else deserve it? Probably not. Maybe
no.
Maybe Danny Strachan, maybe Jason Brown for putting a shift in. Nobody else really were standouts in that game. I know we've got couple of days, well, I said David and Hewitt played the week before. It was his home debut. The new French guy was in as well. But nobody really stood out. And it's what we were talking about earlier on about there's nobody willing to start to try and take the bull by the horns and just say, try and change the game.
Yeah, it's difficult. It can't just be one person trying. No, it doesn't need to say the rest of the players are on a trying, but it's, you know, by taking the bull by the horns, it needs to be a couple of players and sort of real characters in the squad. That's what you're looking for now when the chips are down. Just touching on the keeper getting man of the match, was the keeper named man of the match against Elgin when we conceded 4 as well? Off the top of my head, I'm sure there was a game run about then.
Oh, yeah, Sandy Wood was in a goals that day.
Sandy
Wood,
yes, yeah, right, yes. Goalkeeper, man of the match, 4-0 defeat.
He didn't get the man in the match, but he. A lot of folks said he should have done.
Should have got man of the match. Sorry. Again, that also is an indicament of where we're at. But yeah, it's difficult. That's really to say it's difficult times just now. You're looking for somebody to take the bull by the horns and try and pull us out of this difficult rut that we're in.
Having seen Hevzala play against Montrose and obviously then going away with on international duty and then coming back, the last two games were obviously away from home. He didn't play. He came off the bench against FC Edinburgh, started a game against Dunfermline and got substituted. Would this not have been a game that it was right for him to start? Because we all got a bit excited to after his wee cameo against Montrose, that's maybe something that just get him on for the start. A couple of mazy runs would have lifted the fans and lifted the team as well and got us going for the very beginning. Whereas, you know, the opposite was we seemed too defensive straight away.
Possibly. The only thing I can think of is Falkirk are a slightly physical team. They've got a couple of big guys. And it was maybe offering them a bit of protection. You saw that the first week once we'd seen him, that teams will probably try and double up on him or, you know, one of them let him know you're there in the game early sort of challenges. And Jim's maybe protecting him. And I've nothing wrong with that. You know, you're protecting the player. But there has also come a time where if you've got a good player, you need to play him. And you're right, a home game, he might have been the person that you could have used on the counter-attack to try and get you further up the pitch. But, you know, he didn't play. But you're hoping over the next couple of weeks you'll get to see more of him.
Yeah. It was, as I say, it was quite... quite a depressing watch, but as we said before, you know, dare I say, you almost couldn't expect that now, and that's it's not a good thing to say, obviously, but you kind of come off again. Well, we didn't expect anything less.
Yeah, no, I think that's that's got to be a worry as well, if that's the supporters' thoughts, because normally their home form's relatively good. You can sort of rely on that to get you a chunk of your points through a season. And at the moment, we're falling short of that. It's only going to come through hard work. You know, you can speak about needing the luck and the break from time to time, but we're now in October. I'm not really buying the team need time to gel, especially when we're adding more and more players. It's hard work in the training ground. I can, it's difficult to get the guys to train all together, logistic-wise, and where they're based at with work and everything. But the Falkirk game was maybe a prime example of three games in a week. And yeah, you know, you can argue it, they should be prepared for it, but it is part-time players, and it was maybe just one game too far.
Right, let's get on to the comments. As you can imagine, there was quite a few. So we just got to skim through them slightly. Will Roberts, we got what we deserved. We offer nothing up front, just a complete shambles. Only minor positive is that the new guy seems like a good signing, which we'll come on to. Again, basically just echoing what we said there, we got what we deserved and nothing up front. But we said, I think maybe last week or a week before, maybe 2 weeks in a row, I forget what we keep saying. But playing one up front does just seem to be working. And as we said, well, yes, we've got the main protagonists are out injured, but we have to come up with something different.
Yeah, then I think if Abdi's waiting on Rusty to come back and then all of a sudden things are going to change, that's not going to happen, because the service into the front men isn't there like it has been the last couple of years. Now, yeah, you could argue that, obviously, with Andy McCarthy being out, he's your engine, and you don't have Scott Brown there anymore, and obviously Hamish is out injured. But you've got to adapt to it. And I don't think playing one up top helps for cause. But having said that, having a player of Rusty's quality coming back can't be a bad thing.
Elaine Johnson, it was a Sarah watch.
Certainly
was. It certainly was. Norman Green did all right until they went 1-0 up. How long is it going to take for the team to start to gel? And plus, we need a striker. And it's more or less what you were saying as well. You keep saying that the team needs time to gel, or certain focus saying the team needs time to gel, but how long do you give it?
Yeah, like I said, I can't sit here in October and say we're waiting for a team to gel. I mean, some of these players have been here since July, start of August. You would have a rough idea of how they're gelling new. That's maybe why Jim is looking for more players to come in. He maybe feels that the players that he's got aren't of the quality that we need. Hard to disagree with it. But are you going to get players that are available to come in October that have been picked up by other clubs? I think that would also be a telling story if you're signing players now that don't have clubs. You know, we've got players that are in a play for quite a while. There's maybe a reason for that.
And if I'd also say as well, and just moving them off of footwork, talking about slightly, we've now got 29 players in the squad. I'm assuming they're all being paid to some kind of extent. we're always sort of being told, or the budget's been kind of cut because, you know, we're coming out of COVID and, you know, we need to cut back on things. You know, that's quite a big squad for a part-time League One side to be paying players' wages. As I said, I'm assuming they are getting paid to some kind of extent. That's a lot of money you're paying out for players that, like, as I said, Loren, for example, nae through only fault of his, nae to play him until January.
Hope we're not paying them in goal bonuses. Some players haven't been played for ages. There has been criticism of the board, and somewhat I think it's fair, somewhat potentially unfair, but Jim has been backed. So, you know, when folks say, oh, but he needs backing and everything, he lost a lot of players, and it's been quite easy for the board to say, well, you've lost 10, but you can maybe recruit 5 or 6. Been very well backed. It was the same last August, and we spoke to Jim the end of August, and it was like, oh no, my business is done, and then he signed 3 on deadline day. So he has been well backed. It's maybe just the quality that he thought was there maybe just hasn't quite come to fruition.
Jason Argo, no clue in the pitch, no clue in the dugout. The lasses taking penalties at half time were better than the men on the pitch. I've backed Jim for a long time, but he has to go. There are one or two, as you said earlier on, that have maybe been either on the fence or have been backing the manager. There are one or two who are now saying, you know, it's time to go.
Yeah, everybody's entitled to their opinion. Everybody's got their thoughts and views, and everybody watches different, you know, football differently. That's the brilliant thing about football, is you can be sitting next to someone at the game, but they see a completely different ball game to you. And like I said, I think there's more and more people now voicing their opinion. You can sort of tell by the comment section of the on a Sunday morning, or even a Saturday night, how the game's sort of gone and people's opinions. And it's difficult, like I said, it's difficult to see where we're going. And I struggle to see, you know, come May, that we'll be a League One club based on what we've seen in the first 3 months of the season.
James Morgan kind of echoes that slightly, saying that there's no sign of improvement in any area of the pitch. And that's kind of a worrying sign when you've got 29 players in a squad and that doesn't seem to be improving.
Yeah, it's... I don't think throwing players into the team is the right answer. I don't think signing any more players has got to solve it. I think it's working hard. I think I said it last week. It's to be working hard with the players that you've now got to try and get the right formation that suits us is an attacking sense, and not so much worrying about other teams. But, okay, you'll hear different formations away from home to being at home. That's part of being the football manager. But I think getting a team that you're happy with, and, you know, even if it's saying three games or that where possible of an unchanged team, but you can see a direction, a plan that's in place. You go, right, okay, I can't think we're trying to do now. It's just about trying to get to that position. But I can see where he's coming from, to be honest.
Andy Buchan, we need to get over this whole no one wants to travel here and get a hungry manager and develop local players. And that two things there. Hungry manager, nobody's saying that he's maybe is not as hungry or as passionate about it as he maybe was when he first came in. But sometimes you just need that change, as maybe put Andy's suggestion there as well. The other point as well is something that more and more folk are saying as well, is about why we're not attracting these younger local players. We could go into a whole podcast about that as an episode on its own as to why that's not happening. But that's it's two common themes that are coming through when we ask for people's comments, we read them on other bits and pieces. Those are the two things it's coming through.
So to touch on the first point, I think anybody's, well, maybe I've seen or heard questioning Jim's passion for it. I think when you've rebuilt Peterhead like 9 times over, it becomes a point, it becomes very, very difficult. And, you know, the football world has changed over the last 10, even the last 3-4 years with COVID, things have changed. And as you said, it's not just quite as easy to say, right, you're a local loon, come and play for Peterhead. We kind of have a few guys that were offered contracts last summer, but just for the travelling alone, they decided they would stay at the club that they were, you know, contracted to. It would be brilliant to have a team of local loons and the trained, you know, in Peterhead, and it would be brilliant, but unfortunately, it's not quite as, you know, black and white.
Louise Cardinal's given us a quite a long one, so I'll just, because it's something that's already been mentioned, but there's one thing here that she's got on as well, is there only a handful of players that seem to be playing with any passion or holding other players to account. We know who they are. We can see that on a pitch.
Mm-hmm.
But what I will say is, if this run continues and the results keep going, who's to say that those players, when I then start going, well, Kevin, why bother? Why am I bothering?
It's weird because if you've got homegrown player, home, you know, people from Peterhead playing football or surrounding area, they've got more passion and they don't want to see their club being the way they are. Now, I'm not for one second saying that there is any player in the Peterhead team like this. I'm just speaking as a generic football team, so you will notice when things aren't going your way and you are not from that area, it is very easy to down tools and have the opinion of, well, I'm still getting paid anyway. And from their nae from the area, they're nae walking into their local supermarket and seeing the supporters that pay their hard-earned cash. Like I said, I'm nae saying for 1 second that any Peterhead player is like that. But if you've got local loons, like I just mentioned earlier, it's not just as black and white as getting local loons, but you would see a difference. And, you know, the players that seem to show more passion at certain times is guys that are more from this area than not. But again, it's about everybody pulling together as a team, and it's about if your pal that's next to you in midfield or in your defence isn't quite, you know, getting it, it's about educating them and saying, like, look, this is what it means to the guys, and, you know, just trying to encourage them, because also there's a lot of new players coming to the squad. It's a brand new team, and it's just trying to give them the background story of what, you know, the club means to the supporters.
Peter Cow, pretty straightforward. Relegation is coming. Jim and these players need to go. And he's capitalised, end of. Fairly blunt, fairly straightforward. And that's maybe coming for somebody that's maybe been a supporter of Jim's for a while.
Yeah, it's hard to, when you see comments like that, it's hard to argue otherwise based on what we've seen. Again, there was somebody at work I mentioned today, I said, right, so Jim goes, who do you get in? And he's like, that's not my problem, that's the board. And yeah, I get that, but, you know, what pressure is the board putting, pressure's not a word, but is the board quite happy with Farborough, the current situation? Would they be happy, you know, if they looked at it and go, well, if we're in League Two next season, wouldn't it be the worst thing? I think if that is the case, then you want to see a change in the dugout this season. But if they think, well, no, we need to be a League One club, we've been here for a few years now, we want to sustain that, then you might see a change and more pressure on the manager. But the moment I go back, I personally kind of see how things change going the way we're at the moment. But, you know, other people in the club might have a different opinion.
And just so that nobody thinks that we're just picking out any the negative comments, there are two positive ones, I guess you've got. One for Ian Ritchie. Jim and the staff are doing an excellent job with what they have at their disposal. It's difficult being a part-time team competing against full-time players, and we kind of compete with other teams to attract players, hence why there's an influx of foreign players. And Graham McLean put in as well, there are signs of an improvement occasionally, but having almost every error punished is confidence-sapping. Thankfully, Clyde and Kelty losing keeps us in touch with them as well, but we need to pick up points.
To be fair, yeah. Graham's made a really good point there, that every error seems to go, you know, we get punished for it. Yeah, he's bang on in that sense as well, to be fair to him, because it just seems that every time, like the Tom Ritchie, it hits the bar and then it comes off him. If you're Lux Wee, it hits the bar and it goes, you know, it's out in a different direction. So, yeah, there is that as well. We're needing more luck to turn, but if you're sitting in your own box and you're not pressing, then your luck will never turn. But yeah, I take that point on board as well.
Okay, so we'll move on. It's almost like a weekly spot in the podcast, and we've got another new player to talk about. Julien Carré came in, Frenchman. But honestly, we know nothing about him. purely based on the fact that he hasn't played any football for about 14 months, I think Jim had said it in his post-match. A couple of things would flag up there. I would suggest, why has he not played for over for 14 months? And why has nobody else picked him up? And, you know, he's left Brentford, I think it was, the tail end of in the summer of 2021. Jim's obviously seen him, brought him in, but as I said, we're now up to a score of 29, 12 defenders, 11 midfielders, but only 4 forwards.
Yeah, bit of a red flag, the fact he hasn't played for so long. But I guess the positive was, I thought he did okay. Now, considering you've lost 4-0 at home, you haven't played for 14-15 months, I thought he did okay, to be fair. Put it this way, if you'd said to me, can you pick out the player that hadn't played in 14 months, I wouldn't have picked him out, to be fair. Mm. Like I said, yeah, okay, nothing brilliant, but also you lost the game at home 4-0, so I wouldn't expect to get a glowing review for him. But yeah, I thought early signs There could be, I think, him and Hivzala, if you get the two of them in the team together, a holding midfielder, I think attacking-wise might look a bit better. Yeah, I thought he did okay, to be fair.
We assume he's got to be a holding midfielder. He's a midfielder. Seems to be a holding midfielder. So that would suggest that Ryan Strachan will probably play in the back line more often than he will do in midfield.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad move, to be fair. I think Ben Ryan and Jason at the back, two strong loons. They'll certainly take any nonsense. I think that could be a good shout. We've got our reservations on Paul Dixon, the signing of Paul, but I don't think he's a centre-half. Evidently, he's not. He'll hate Andy McDonald again. I don't think that's the smartest move, hitting him centre-back. That leaves you sort of David Wilson, who has been in and out of favour with injuries as well. So, yeah, I think if you had the, you know, Ryan and Jason at the back, two strong loons, yeah, I'd be in favour of that.
And just going back to Graham's point about Kelty and Clyde losing, Clyde's on a horrendous run, no points in the last six. They sit in eighth with 7 points, Kelty's in ninth with 7 points, and we are sitting in tenth on 5 points. The optimist might say, well, we're only 2 points off of Clyde, and one win could, you know, could catapult us up to eighth. Obviously, depending on how other results go, but I think it's the fact that we kind of see a win coming, and we mentioned this before. When we were on that run last season, you felt the performances was there. We just needed the luck to turn. The performances haven't been here yet.
Yeah, the optimist will say you can do it. I think if we win every game between now and the end of the season, we'll win the title. But based on what we're seeing, like I said, it's difficult to see where that win's coming from. But yeah, I get that point as well. The optimist thing, you would say, well, you're one win, potentially two from being a mid-table club. Clyde started the season really well. They were up there in second with SC Edinburgh. I think I made the comment with you that, you know, I thought it'd be a mini-league between the three of us, and, you know, they were sitting in the top three at one point. So it just shows you things can change. And this is for a couple of good performances and the right result. And yeah, things can, you know, we could be sitting here mid-November, things can be completely different.
Right, as we said last week, Balmoral celebrated 25 years. We've got your guys' memories, best moments, and such. Acutely aware of we've rattled on quite a bit already, so we'll get a two or three of the memories. Barry Watson, he came in with the first, definitely one of the highlights was beating Fort William 17-0 in the early days. I think that was roughly in the first season at Balmoor.
That's right, yeah.
And also got beaten Hearts as well in the League Cup, which I think a lot of folk have mentioned as well, is beating Hearts in the League Cup. And I think that was Cathro's last game for Hearts.
I think it was. He got the Dundee line for that.
Him and his, in his laptop, of course.
So, yeah.
David's put a wee funny story here. He took his dog to Balmoor for an evening game, went to support the Blue Twin against Inverness. Unfortunately, someone asked me what was his dog was called, and the dog he sheepishly replied was called Carly.
I hope that's a true story.
Whether or not he took a dog back again, he didn't say. Graham McLean back in again. The 2-2 draw with Rangers on opening day, plus beating sides like Dundee and Hearts as well are obviously highlights. I think, as I said, a lot of people have mentioned those as well. So many have come in, as I said, we're rattling through your time. But, you know, there's probably plenty that we could have mentioned just as an episode on its own.
Yeah, absolutely. There's been a few good memories at Balmoor, and, you know, Jim's been a huge part of that as well. Again, this episode maybe doesn't sound like it, but we've had a good time under Jim. There's been a lot of good things, a lot of positives over his time in charge. And like Graham said, we've got the result against Rangers, you've got performances against Hearts and Dundee. So, yeah, there's been some good performances in that match.
David's one about the colleague, the one I'm going to mention, because I think it might be the same game, and it's my Bobby Mann story. I can never remember what you've seen before.
Yeah.
I'm going to mention it on here. So you remember where we used to stand, right in line with the 18-yard box. I think where the 50-50 is new. I think that's where we used to stand. And it was Inverness in a cup game. I think it was probably about, early 2000s. And as you do, you know, you pick a player out, you're going to give them some pelters. And it happened to be that I was going to go for Bobby Mann. But we must have changed or swapped before kickoff, because Peterhead were shooting towards the Balmore end. So obviously, Bobby Mann, defender, would have been right in front of us. And I was getting him a bit of pelters. Nothing too drastic, nothing offensive, just getting donkey and things like that. And the thing is, Inverness were 2-0 up at half time. And of course, he's clocked us. So he's, as he's walking off, he's getting us a wee kind of wave and the rest of it. So second half, he's doing the other end. Peter, he turned it around, 2-2. And I think with about 5 minutes to go, Inverness score a winner for a corner. And it's Bobby Mann who scores it. And he comes right in front of me and celebrates. it just pissed you off so much. But to be fair, at the end of the game, because he was getting it to me, I was getting it to him, obviously, during the first half. And I think that's sometimes that's what you miss with these kind of characters, if you like, because you don't see that there is only one Bobby Mann right enough. But you don't see a lot of these kind of characters in the game that are willing to take a bit of stick as well. Because it's easier done at stadiums like Balmore, because you're right on the touchline. You can get a full back going at noon again, but that's it. And obviously if 7 or 8 years later he signs for Peterhead.
He remembered you.
I wonder if he did. He probably didn't, but no, I just said it was one of those kind of things, because I got a bit of stick for after the game for mucking Bobby Mann score the winner. I can't why I'm getting blamed, but okay. Right, we'll move on quickly to this Saturday's game, Queen of the South. It'll be a history-making game for us. First time that we've visited Palmerston. Quickly, what you expecting for this one?
I'm looking for a reaction. You know, normally I would try and describe what I think the game is. I'm looking for a reaction, because I mentioned it about the Elgin game. You know, we got that against Dunfermline. Performance was okay against Edinburgh. It was the last 15 minutes sort of capitulated. But the performance on Saturday needs to be at a marked improvement.
They won the previous game 4-1, and I think we'd said during that time they didn't play particularly well, but they didn't need to.
Yeah, it's been the story of the season sort of thing, isn't it? It's been one of them things where teams have come up here, or we've played against them, and they haven't had to play that well to get the result. And I said the first time it's been like by 3 or 4 goals, and then I had to work that hard for it. But again, I'm looking for a marked improvement on what we've seen on Saturday. It wouldn't be easy by any stretch of the imagination, but you've got to get an improvement.
They're sitting seventh in the league at the minute. They haven't had the best at times, having been relegated. They play on Tuesday night. They've got Kelty. So, you know, if Kelty gets something out of that, that just opens up the gap a little bit more. That's obviously the game in hand that they've got. You know, so we're looking at it as well. Okay, it's a full-time team. They're playing on Tuesday. We then play them on Saturday. We've had a full week to prepare for this game. You know, the difficulty is going doing that and playing like we did. You know, 5 at the back, 4 in midfield, 1 up top. Just inviting the pressure on again.
Yeah, I don't think we can set up to invite pressure. And it sounds daft, but we've got to go and try and get a foothold in the game early on. It's the old cliche, then I concede early, be tight, you know, frustrate the crowd. It's all them sort of things, but there's a reason why they're cliches. Because they work. You mentioned it about the Dunfermline game. 0-0, they had one shot on target in the first half. They came out in the second half and the crowd were getting a bit restless. So it can't work in your favour. But again, I go back to you look at, if you put a performance like we did against Falkirk, we could get barred.
Yeah, and that is a big worry, because we then have Alloa, and then we've got FC Edinburgh again, tail end of the month. So, you know, as I said, it doesn't get any easier. It doesn't get any better for us. But we need to find a performance again.
I guess the worrying thing as well would be you're only a Kelty win, a Clyde win from being completely isolated at the bottom. So already in October, you're starting to worry about other teams. And normally that's something you'd never look at until about February, March time. But already here we are in October, and you're thinking, well, you're sort of wanting Queens to win on Tuesday to keep the gap as it is.
And that is it for this week. We do hope you have enjoyed it once again. As always, my thanks goes to Martin Smith for being here, and to you guys for listening as well. I've been Colin Byers. We'll be back again next week. So until then, stay safe, and we'll see you all again very soon.